This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello! My name is Jazz William Cartwright. My pronouns are he, him, and I am joined today by
Jeremy Cobb. My pronouns are also he, him, but Andy Ferrant calls me the Cobbstatrician because I deliver those good podcasts.
Hey, yes. I remember that. I remember you getting that one. It was a good one.
That was a very good one. Shout out to Andy.
And it's also an apt one, yes. I would say. Would you not say, Jeremy? Yeah, exactly.
That's why I chose it.
Yeah, well, that's nice. It's nice. It's nice work, Jeremy. It's good podcast work.
Thank you.
You put in there. And
living up to the nickname.
And the audience appreciates it. Yeah, exactly. You're doing it. You're doing the work. Because today we are joined by someone else from Oxventure and Outside Extra. That's right. It's Ellen Rose. Welcome to Three Black Halflings.
Oh, my God.
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe. Woof.
Let's make them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Hi. Ellen Rose here. Pronouns she, her. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the Halfling Stadium. This is a big stadium filled with our audience. They're
wow.
all here.
And they're all half
halflings.
Hi. And they're all halflings.
Oh, sorry. Hi.
Low.
Hello, low. For all those listening to this, Ella made a very good joke about waving down, and Jeremy then took that joke and knocked out of the park. It was great. That was a lovely tag team, guys. Well done.
Thank you.
Starting off strong. How are you doing, Ellen?
Good. I'm very jet lagged as of recording. I just got back from PAX West over in Seattle. Had a lovely time seeing lots
of
games.
It's an 8-hour difference. Oh, my goodness. Oh.
I'm like, it's
brutal.
Oh, man, yeah.
I'm
usually like fine going west, it's coming back east, I'm just like woo.
Had you been to the west coast before?
I'm exactly the same.
Yeah So I've been out for like various conventions and stuff, LA based things, and have been to PAX West once before back in 2019. So this is our first time back there. It was really fun, really nice to be out there. Really love Seattle. Lovely vibe, lovely place. And we had a little bit of spare time. We went out to see some of the places where Twin Peaks was filmed. So we went to the RR Diner.
That's pretty cool.
We went and saw the falls. It was like with the hotel next to it. It was great. It looked absolutely gorgeous. We were all nerding out. I was out there with Andy actually. So Andy took us, was like, right, everyone, we're going to do two Twin Peaks. Come on. I was like, yep, fine by me.
Okay, let's do it.
So yeah, it was great.
Yeah, we were literally just having a discussion off air about all of this. It's a very strange thing. I don't know if you are, Jeremy, but I know I've got a lot of cons coming up over the next few weeks. So I feel like, and months. So I feel like,
yeah,
I'm going to be feeling that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
Cons are exhausting. Like, they're fun,
especially with a jet lag.
Yeah,
as well,
like, I feel like that many cons adjusting. In a row is like, or in a short amount of time is. I feel like it stops being as much fun and starts just kind of becoming grueling. At that point.
Yeah.
because it just happened to be like, all right, here we go.
Here we go.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, because cons are a little bit like D&D in a castle world or something, a similar kind of event like that, where it's like, as soon as you kind of like step through the door, like you have to be like on. You know what I mean?
Because yeah.
like, there's going to be people that know who you are and, you know, things like that. And I think that's like a big adjustment. You know, to make, whereas like when you're just attending a con and you have like the joy of anonymity, you can just kind of like hover around and, you know, just do the things that you want to do. So yeah, I definitely feel for you there, especially with the jet lag coming back this way, because it is tough. However, we can't start in the present, because we have to start all the way back from the very origins.
Three past,
and we have to ask you for your three past halflings, that's our name. We have to ask you for your nerdy origin story. So where did your kind of involvement, joy, love, whatever it is, of nerdy stuff, where did that start for you?
Like nerdy things in general?
In general, yeah. This isn't as have to general be as you want to be. RPGs. This could be like you started watching a TV fantasy show like Buffy or something.
Yeah. Well, both my parents were librarians.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yo. You were born in.
Okay, cool. You asked the question.
There we
Perfect.
Go.
That's it. Done. Completed it.
yes, exactly. I was born in the nerdiness. but yeah, no, I really, my dad got me a Game Boy when I was a kid. My mum got me all the good books and stuff. And I was big into like the fantasy books and things like that when I was younger. Anything with like elves and stuff in it, I was like, cool, I want to read that. Any kind of like cool variations on fantasy things. Like, I remember when I was younger, like some of my favorite books were I really loved the Garth Nix Abelson series. If you've not read that, I heavily recommend. I love all that kind of like the mystery and the necromancers and it's so great. And yeah, like basically if anything was vaguely kind of like, ooh, magic. Magic was the big thing.
Magic, yeah.
I remember.
So you were more fantasy than sci-fi then?
Yeah, like I was very late on the sci-fi thing. So I think my mum got me into sci-fi. My mum is like the one who got me into like all the comedy stuff that I love. So like I've been a comedy nerd my entire life. Like I love comedy. I remember one summer holiday, my mum was like, okay, they're showing this show. This was on the before we had on-demand TV and stuff. And if you wanted to watch something that was really late, you had to record it on your VCR, aging myself here. She was like, Ellen, there's this really funny sci-fi TV show that I think you'd really like. It's from the 80s and they're replaying it at like 11 o'clock at night. So you'll have to stay up, but it's some holidays. So I'll let you. I must be like 8, 9, 10. I can't remember exactly how old. But she's like, it's this show called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hey!
Yes! I was like, it's either that or Red Dwarf.
Red
it's like
Dwarf,
one of the
I was, two, already,
I was like, I didn't
or,
know which one it was.
Yeah, so my mum was already letting me stay up on a Friday night to watch Red Dwarf.
Cool. I was like, it had to be one of the two.
Freaking love Red Dwarf. It's so good. I've got like the big DVD set just down here somewhere that I can't bring myself
Amazing.
To get rid of, even though it's all on like demand. So I'm like, I've got the huge book.
You literally don't have means of playing it anymore, but you're like, I still got
to
hang on to
it. I literally thought about this the other day. I was like, I have boxes of like Blu-rays and DVDs and stuff in my attic, which I'm just like refuse to get rid of. But I'm like, I think I probably could play them on my PlayStation if I wanted to, but like, otherwise I have no other means of like playing these things.
That's weird hilarious. Though. It just hit me because I was thinking, just quick sidetrack, most DVDs doesn't really matter, but when you get to like the special edition like DVDs, your Lord of the Rings is your Criterions, where they have hours of bonus features, that hours. We've lost something there.
Yeah,
because you don't get that with streaming. You flat out don't get that stuff. Oh man. Yeah.
They do sometimes release it as like different, as like separate featurettes. Like I noticed that there's a there's like a lot of like Disney
do
a lot of like making
stuff.
Of right. Yeah, like making of certain
like
Marvel
Disney
programs.
Plus.
And that's like a and that's like a full series in itself. Like some of them are like 3-4 part episode like series. Mm-hmm. So some do, but like I definitely know what you mean, because there was definitely a trend, I think, like early 2000s, like late 90s, early 2000s, where like everything had like a chunky amount of like almost like the whole film again. Mm-hmm. Just in behind the scenes,
like
stuff.
Lord of the Rings. There's more. I feel like there's more behind the scenes footage that you could see on those DVDs than there is actual movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's just so much. Yeah.
I quick sidetrack. I don't know if either of you saw this clip of Justice Smith in the behind the scenes for the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
No.
But it's one of the funniest clips, and I have to applaud the guy who like afterwards who like really played along. But basically there's a clip of Justice Smith saying they were asking him about how like it felt like casting magic, and he said that he purposefully would make really weird and elaborate hand gestures to kind of like catch the CGI people out. And then it perfectly cuts to the head of CGI for the movie, and he is just giving the most like deadpan death stare, and it's like so perfectly timed.
Like, please, it's Justice, we're not paid enough for this.
Fully, but it's like literally cuts from
literally not paid enough. But I'm paid enough for the regular jobs, let alone this.
It's like, it's just honestly, it's such a perfect cut. Please go and dig out that little bit of random bit of BCS, because it's just like whoever cut that together was having a great time. They were just like, hey, listen, can you just look really deadpan down the camera right now for us? That'd be great.
That reminds me, for the special features of the movie Sky High, speaking of Disney and fantasy, there is the guy who plays like the science teacher with basically the mega mind head. In the interview, he's like, I don't really know what to answer. Just play a clip of me saying, yes, I agree, after whatever other people say. And so for the rest of the featurettes, there will be people saying some stuff, and they'll just have him saying, yes, I agree.
Wow, I aspire to be that level of comfortable in my job that I just go, look, I'm not going to do this, so you do it for me. Yeah. Like, that's fantastic. Like, that was in your contract, sir, and you just bailed. I love it. Well done. Yeah,
the other thing is commentaries as well. So one of my favorite TV shows is a show called Look Around You, which is Peter Serafinowicz, Robert Popper doing fake educational programs from like the 80s vibes, like 70s, 80s. And like the commentary was amazing, and they just had this thing where it was like it had the word magnet on top, and then there's just this conversation of like they nearly in thing they wanted to make the person mispronounce it as Manier, and it's just them going Manier, and now me and my sister, whenever we see magnet, we're like Manier. And it's just this obscure commentary edition on the DVD that we have.
That's such a loss. The series of unfortunate events, the original movie that they did way back in 2003, they had the actual author of the series play Lemony Snicket, as Lemony Snicket, doing a commentary with the director of the film. And there was like this weird meta thing where they said the director of the film had captured Lemony Snicket and was forcing him to watch the film. And at one point, he launches into an impromptu musical number, accompanying himself on accordion, singing about leeches in the movie, like during the film.
I did not know about this. I need to dig this out.
It's really funny.
That is incredible. And also the most series of unfortunate events thing I've ever heard.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like, and there's one particular highlight that I have to shout out on the show. Just you'll understand why. There's a part where the director, I think Brad Silberling was the director of that movie. He says that they got Cedric the Entertainer in to play one of the roles because he brought that urban flair. And there's like a pause, and Lemony Snicket is like, now, I think that you, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing that you are using the word urban in a way that it has come to be used recently, which is as a substitute for the word black. Now, I myself I am an urban person, and I have lived in cities, but I have also been Caucasian for nearly all of my life. And it was the most, like, you just windmill dunked on the director, and he's audibly uncomfortable. Like, he doesn't know what to
say
to
that. That's like
that.
The level, that's like the kind of dunk where you jump over the dude, and you kind of like brush, you like he feels like brush against his head and he's not sure what it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, it's like that level of dark. Like, wow. Lemony Snicket was already up there as one of my heroes because yes. I love the series of Unfortunate Events books. As a kid, I was obsessed with them. That has made him like S tier hero in my head.
Yes.
Like to like truly not give a shit that much that you just kind of go, like, true, like, this is my film. I wrote these. Like, I'm just going to say it how it is. I'm not getting dragged down. If you're happy saying some racist shit, like, yeah. I'm not associating with that.
Yeah.
Wow. That is absolutely
whole thing's
incredible.
On YouTube. I highly recommend watching. Amazing. You could probably find the
I'm
various
gonna have
clips.
To go and seek that out immediately. That's incredible. Well, I think, yeah, I think, well, anyway, to get us back on track,
Ellen,
which I think we were, we were somewhere in and around talking about watching Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And staying up doing that and getting into, and I guess that was your bridge into like sci-fi and things like that. So
yeah.
I guess maybe my next question for you then is how did that start to then morph into your career, your job? Like what route did you take? Was the intention always to get into this kind of thing, or, you know, was it one of those kind of happenstance things as it tends to be for a lot of people, including myself?
Yeah. Well, I initially, like, for a very long time as a teenager, my plan was to become a game developer. So I went to, you know, I did the kind of computing A level, do all these different things. I went to university initially to do computer science. And then like 2 years in, realized that I hate programming, which happens to a lot of people who decide to do computer science.
Right.
And but I switched to another subject, management, which I really enjoyed. And I liked the kind of like, it's a like sociology style, but then it was a bunch of economics and stuff. And it's very interesting. And but I was still, video games have been like a huge part of my life from growing up. Funnily enough, I played the Discworld video game before I read the books. So like video games have made me read books. That's and so like I you know,
especially if you include reading the guides.
Yes.
That was what I used to I used to say this to my mum when my mum was like, come on, like you need to read more or whatever, and I'd be like, I am, and I'd pull out some like thick like Fallout
huge
3 guide
manual
or something.
A big tome.
Like, I've read this whole thing, okay?
Yeah.
Like,
it's got cool art and tips
okay.
and stuff.
Yeah.
Some of those are really well written.
Yeah.
And honestly, that was my favorite part about it, Jeremy, was that 50% of the page was artwork.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't enjoy reading as a kid, like, at all. But yeah, I definitely agree with you. I've definitely read books as a result of playing a cool video game, for sure.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was a Discworld video game.
It's a point-and-click game. It's, oh my gosh, it's, it's point-and-click. It's completely obtuse, but it's brilliant. Eric Idle voices Rincewind.
Whoa!
Whoa! That's pretty cool.
So yeah, that's one of my very early memories.
His sworn nemesis.
My sworn nemesis, Eric Idle.
Eric!
Seriously, if I met Eric Idle, I'd probably just be like, "I love you. You're great." He's one of the good Pythons left.
I was thinking, as soon as you said Eric Idle, I was like, one of the few remaining Pythons that we can say without any sort of, well.
There was an amazing joke at the British Comedy Awards earlier this year that was like, oh, and now we have Eric Idle, one of the two good Pythons left.
Brutal. You know, John Cleese was my favorite Python too.
He's
Fawlty Towers,
a lot of
man.
The best
he's
parts.
Just old man shouts at cloud now. It's such
really
a shame.
Is.
Fawlty Towers is a masterpiece.
That's what I mean. Fawlty Towers is my jam.
Funny.
My absolute jam. Fawlty Towers actually, I remember like had quite a big impact on me in the like. Because I danced as a kid, I remember like that was the first time I ever made the connection between like moving as an actor, like the idea that you can include like movement as a part of the what you're doing. You know what I mean? Because John Cleese, especially in Fawlty Towers, was like such a physical comedy. You know what I mean?
And, the Ministry of Silly Walks.
I had that poster.
Yeah, I literally was about to say the Ministry of Silly Walks.
That's it. At uni. Yeah.
Oh, have you seen him do it live? Like it's incredible. He does it on stage, and it's somehow more impressive. Like the weird moves he's coming out with. That dude is a physical beast. Like he's so good when it comes to just physicality and comedy and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's
like the Rowan Atkinson Invisible Drums is still really, it's probably up there as like one of my all-time favorite things I've ever, like, oh god, it was just, it's so good. It's so, so good.
Yeah.
Ellen, you keep bringing up like incredible cultural touchstones. Cool. It's really hard. It's really hard
say
to not want to talk about these things.
Yeah, we have nothing to respond dumb. About. Yeah. Say something stupid and we're just uncomfortable.
Be less interesting, Ellen, please.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but no, when I was at uni, I got into comedy society at uni. I was the president of my uni's comedy society. I was also a vague member of Doctor Who society as well.
Oh, very cool. So, what was it called? Did you have a special name?
It was just Doctor Who society.
Not like Whovians or anything.
But
like that.
I did. I we helped try and get a Dalek voted in as president. at the university, the student president, which was fun, which a friend of mine had to be like, okay, if we win, I will do it, because we had to have like a contingency
but within a Dalek
suit. And then through that I really came out of my shell at uni. Like school, I was just like the kind of quite nerdy kid who didn't really know how to put themselves forward enough for things. Like I, you know, did all the work that I needed to do and everything like that, and I had like my friends that I was really close with, but like I really loved performing and stuff, and I'd always go for like the school musical but not quite get it, or like I'd go for the main part and then I'd get the part that was in, I was in it for 5 minutes at the beginning and then I was never seen again, kind of thing, and it was frustrating. But then when I was at uni, I discovered, well, like I'd already been watching this thing called YouTube for a while. In 2010, 1st of January 2010, I finally was like, right, I'm gonna start making videos on YouTube. I was just making vlogs, kind of like, oh, 7 things I hate about this, which is, you know, guess what I do now for a living is list videos. I just had a lot of fun like doing little, I did some little skits. I did a parody song of a fascination called Procrastination. And
what year
all
was
these
this?
Sorts of other things though. That was 2010 or 11.
I was about to say, I bet it was because that was parody song era. That was, I was,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, 2010, 2011, 2012, maybe a little bit 2009.
It's still a way too big a part of my musical listening on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Like comedy like songs and parody songs are like still in my musical rotation now.
Yeah,
from like that era.
They're great.
Like,
I mean, Weird Al, yeah, that's all you need. Like,
did y'all see Weird, by the way, the movie Weird? The Weird Al. It's shockingly good. Like, I didn't think I watched it. And I was like, this is
I feel like
be
it
okay.
really went away like quickly. Like, no, I felt like it.
I know, but it's legitimately like, I can't say enough. It's actually very good. Like, I'd probably give it like a close to. I'd have to rewatch it, but after the first watch, I can't wait for it to be like, that's like an 8 out of 10 for me. Like, that's a really good comedy.
Okay.
It's legitimately funny, very creative, shockingly violent in parts, but like in like a funny way. Like, if you enjoy Weird Al Yankovic, if you enjoy comedies, I highly recommend. If you enjoy stuff that like mocks musical biopics, that's
great.
You're not going to get too much better than that.
Okay, exciting.
Yeah, Ellen, so back to what you were saying. I'm sorry.
It's good. I was like doing bits and bobs. And then through that, a few years later, 2015, I got approached by Xbox saying, hey, would you like to make videos for our UK channel, Xbox On, and talk about video games? At which I was like, yes, please. Because I was working a very nice job in marketing and, you know, whatever. Like the people that I worked with were very nice, but I was basically just making websites for banks. And it was like, and
from going to want to be like a video game developer to making videos
for banks. Mm-hmm. Of like all of the web, of like all of the like sectors to make websites for, that feels particularly dull.
One of them was a banking lobby group as well. So I was like, here's your lovely website that I've made for you to make your life, your jobs easier and our lives much worse. Anyway.
I'd be so tempted to just hide little Easter eggs in there. Like, these people are bad. They're stealing your money.
That's like them. It almost feels like, that's such a weird idea that you're not even an employee of the bank. You're a person that they hired to do it. It feels like they handed you a shovel and asked you to dig the grave. Like, that's what it feels like. Which is just like, oh, this is wrong.
Yuck. Absolutely yuck.
So then I worked with Xbox for a little while, and then outside Xbox approached me, literally a few months in, being like, hey, would you like to come and work for us? At which point I was like, oh yeah, it would be cool.
Great.
Because it was so funny, we went for like a drink so that we could all kind of like chat, and you know, it was basically just to, you know, find out the vibe. It was less of a job interview, more just like a vibe check. It was one point where we were all, someone said, oh, do you like Stuart Lee? And I was like, I love Stuart Lee. And then they were like, this is it. It's like, Stuart Lee is like the litmus paper for us. I remember right near the end, there was one bit, Auntie turned to me and went, wait, I'm sorry, I forgot to ask, like, do you like even like our videos? Like, it's fine if you don't. I'm not even like, he was like,
I can imagine, you know, Andy saying that so perfectly.
Like, I just you know, because we don't want you to feel like you're just being nice or whatever, you know. Would you feel happy making the sort of stuff that we make? And I was like, I've followed you since like 2013 or something, quite near the beginning. I was like, yeah, your list videos are like the best ones on YouTube in my opinion. They like that. So
I got the job.
And then it's been lovely ever since. And then one day we all decided, hey, outside Xbox got to 2 million subscribers, let's just do a one-off of D&D. That'd be fun. And now we've got our own channel for it and everything, and we've been doing all different tabletop stuff as well, and it's been really, really, really fun.
And it's absolutely great, and it's amazing to see what Oxventure is like kind of grown into as well. Like, whenever you see you know, like whenever I go onto like the charts and stuff, I'm always like so happy because like Oxventure is always in like the top 10 and stuff. Like
the podcast stuff blows my mind with stuff like that. I remember when we were like kind of like sorting it out, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna have a podcast, I'm gonna be one of those people with a podcast. I'm so excited.
it really is a blessing and a massive curse, because trying to explain to people what you're like, me trying to explain to serious people who have like normal jobs that I podcast for a living, like it really honestly makes it sound like I'm just like a rich kid who doesn't have a job.
Yeah,
like that's all that it, like all that people hear when I tell them that's what I do. And I'm like, no, has people actually listen to it? We're in like the top 1% of all podcasts, which also isn't really that hard, because there's so many podcasts like people don't really listen to, but that's like not the point. The point is that people do actually listen to this one that I do, and a couple that I do. It's tough.
We have that.
I feel like YouTube is like recently crested over to the point where I feel like you're probably okay saying that you like have a YouTube channel.
Well,
would you agree or no?
I was literally just about to say that actually sometimes we get the same with YouTube. So some people,
you get
two very separate reactions with YouTube. Is either someone's like, oh, cool, you're cool, what's your channel, blah, blah, blah. Or the other one, which is an extremely English middle-aged reaction, because that's always been like that level, that age of person. And they go, and you get paid for that, do you?
At the end, you could have said, oh really, do you get paid for that at the beginning? It's the equivalent of somebody being like, you get paid for that?
They might as well just say that.
Excuse me, do you know how hard
and
I
people
work
pay you for this?
Do you know what's so funny as well? I don't know exactly, but I would hazard a guess as to say that YouTube as an entity probably is the most successful streaming platform on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, Which is hilarious to think.
Do you mean all, like, not live streaming, but all streaming? Like, just streaming video at all?
I think
Like streaming video. I
either them about, or a porn site.
Right, sure. Probably, yeah. Honestly. Yeah.
It would either be YouTube or a porn site. It wouldn't be Netflix. Yeah. It wouldn't be Disney Plus.
But it's, I mean, it's not, it's like, not in terms of profit, it's definitely YouTube.
Twitch is number one for live streaming, but overall, I think you're 100% correct. It's either YouTube or porn.
Yeah, for sure. And even then, I reckon, I don't know. That's a conversation.
Yeah,
for,
I guess the,
like,
the real
episode.
Question is the porn market too diluted? Because YouTube barely has competitors. They used to have, like, Dailymotion and whatever else.
Sure.
Those have all fallen away at this point. It's basically, like, halfway Twitch. Yeah. And half the biggest Twitch stars post on YouTube anyway. Yeah. So
I was gonna say pretty much most of the big Twitch stars I know have a YouTube channel where they just post
compilations,
live
and stuff,
videos and compilations and stuff like that on there anyway. So so that's what I mean. I just think it's very funny to me that people, you know, have that reaction about YouTube, and it's like, no, you really don't understand.
Yeah, it's like actually you're
infinitely more profitable. infinitely more profitable than Netflix. But if I said I was working at Netflix, you'd be like,
wow.
You know what I mean?
Like, a that's corporation. Incredible. Oh, yes, that's legitimate. That's legitimate work.
That's what it is. People don't like it when you work for yourself and you don't have to answer to it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay, I see.
It's like when you're saying you're an actor, because the next question is, have I seen you in anything?
Have I seen you in anything?
On the one hand,
have
you could
been
say,
anything I'd know?
Exactly. Sometimes you could say it, you could construe that as like, they're just being friendly and like trying to identify with your work. But there's often an undercurrent of like, are you an actor who matters? Like, are you
I'll give
an actor?
You legitimacy. I'll give you legitimacy by telling you whether I've seen you in something.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And hilarious as hilarious as it is when you're like, yeah, I've been in stuff which is way more successful than the things that you have in mind, but I know for a fact if
you
I said EastEnders
it.
Right now, you'd be blown away.
Yeah.
But the fact that I say, you know, like, a big show on the internet or whatever, like, Oxventure, you know, which I've done twice, nothing. Zero. Mm-hmm. Zero fucks given. Yeah, it's... Well, yeah. Well, I'm getting, like... I feel like I'm getting, like, flashbacks now to, like, family dues and parties. Do you know what I mean?
So many parties, so many family members.
Which I've really avoided for, like, a number of years.
Yeah.
Where I'm just, like, purposefully, for this reason, just being, like... Until I can, with that podcasting money, turn up in a really nice car, I don't think I'm willing to go to another one.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when I can turn up in, like, a Ferrari, and they'll be like, wow, you're... And I'm like, yep, podcasting. Screw you.
the license plate, like, says 3BH.
Yeah, 3BH pod or something. Yeah. Like, that's, yeah, for sure.
Or
yeah,
pod daddy.
Absolutely.
Like, on the pod.
Pod daddy. That's going to be what I'm going to put on the back of my Ferrari. I'm going to pay all that money for a Ferrari and then put Pod Daddy on the back of it. Mm.
Not even on the license plate.
I mean,
to us,
that kind of tracks with people that buy Ferraris.
The car. Pod Daddy.
That actually reminds me, my wife's first ever car had, like, full-blown Chinese writing on the side, and she, to this day, has no idea what it said. She was like,
Are there photos of it that exist?
There might be, yeah, because actually. I didn't think about this.
We have enough
definitely
fans.
Translate it.
Statistically speaking,
yeah.
Somebody speaks Mandarin, assuming that it's Mandarin
surely.
And not, like, Cantonese or something. I bet if we post it, somebody will be able to look. Connie might be able to read it.
Yes!
I don't know what languages Connie can read, but I'm pretty sure they can read Mandarin. So, like, if it's Mandarin, we should send Connie a photo and see what they say.
A picture of it and find out what it says.
Yeah.
Because that would be, especially if it's, like, super offensive, that would be... really
Connie,
for me.
Like, blocks you on all social media. Yeah. Cuts all ties with 3PH.
Cuts all ties completely. This actually has reminded me of something that I did promise Ella that we were going to do. So we'll go ahead and slide it in now a little bit later than we'd normally do it. But why don't we go ahead before we move on and ask the next question with a lore dump. We haven't done this. We do this with some of our guests. This was for all those new or haven't heard one of these before. This was a segment that was introduced by Erica Ishii. Mm-hmm. The concept of the lore dump is very, very simple. We will share a piece of lore, a very simple 2-3 sentence maybe, fact or a piece of information about us as a person, and the only rule to this thing is that you cannot and no one can answer, ask any follow-up questions, and you provide no extra context. You just drop this piece of lore and then that's it just exists. It's just there out in the world. I actually do have one. I think. I had one. It was in my head very briefly. Oh, yes, here we go. I once got had the opportunity to be in a Cyberman outfit for a number of hours. And it was one of the single worst experiences of my entire life, because I had been up till the ungodly hours of the morning the previous night partying, having forgotten that this was happening the next day, and then had to be in 30 degree heat in Cardiff dressed as a Cyberman, and it was truly the worst experience.
When you say this, is this a Cyberman from Doctor
questions.
Who or a Cyberman?
No follow-up questions.
Well, I just need to understand what you're saying. You say a Cyberman from Doctor Who or a Cyberman from Dragon Ball Z?
No, sorry. A Cyberman from Doctor Who.
If it's Cardiff, it's Doctor Who.
It's
Look, you never know. Maybe there's a lot of DBZ fans in Cardiff. There's a ton in Spain. Apparently the Spanish dub is one of the best ones. So
there's not many black people in Cardiff though, Jeremy, so I don't think
that's true. Just live.
I don't think there are that many DBZ fans. And Liv got out of this.
Yeah.
But you have to wear a full like spandex suit underneath, like a full swimsuit thing underneath that, and it was oh my god, I sweat. I sweat. Jeremy or Ellen, do you have a lord up for us?
I'm trying to think of a good one.
Can be absolutely anything, just with zero context. Ellen, you look like you got something.
Okay, so this is one that I have shared on the internet before many moons ago. So it'd be interesting to see how
there may be more context available, but you have to dig it out from the archives of the internet.
Yeah.
So good luck.
So seeing as we were talking about the Weird Al film earlier, Daniel Radcliffe's godmother lived in the house that I grew up in.
What? The way that was phrased is painful because I have so many questions. That's really infuriating. Good one. Really good one. Nice work. Nice work. God damn. So many questions. Okay. Lived in the house. Like, that's like, do you know what I mean? It's not like, is my mum. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, it's just, it lived in the, like, what?
Like, at the same
time.
She wouldn't leave.
She was just in the shed and refused to leave.
Living in a cupboard under the stairs and refused to leave.
We didn't actually have a cupboard under the stairs.
Yes. Oh, incredible.
I got two possibles, so you can pick which one you would like me to say. One of them is sports related. The other one is racism related. Which would you rather hear?
Ellen, dealer's choice.
I want the spicy one.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go racism.
The racism one is definitely more spicy. So within the same trip, which lasted, I believe, fewer than 4 days. So within a 3-day span, I visited the Martin Luther King Museum and saw a Klan march.
Mama!
That's not what you want!
Yeah.
That's a really upsetting juxtaposition.
Ooh. Yeah, it was wild.
Oh, just, okay, this is definitely going against the rule. Can I just ask which was first? Just because that really feels like it has a big bearing.
I'll be honest, I actually don't remember.
Okay, fascinating. Yeah, I can understand how those events would kind of mesh together in your mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a lot happened on that trip. Like, a whole lot of stuff happened on that trip. Most of it really good. But yeah, there was
But that thing is, what's funny, I don't know if this is the same thing that's going through your mind right now, Ellen, but in my mind, what's funny is there's two possible things here in my head. And I know this is probably not how it worked, but this is how it's going in my head. One version of this is Jeremy walked out of the Martin Luther King Museum and they were just there.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious and messed up. Or alternatively, Jeremy saw the Klan march and then to cleanse himself went to the Martin Luther King.
That's my law in my head.
That's the headcanon
for
me.
That's what I do.
He was like,
I need to cleanse myself. Yeah, I was like, this is unpleasant. I need
like
to
burning
go see
incense
something better.
In Martin Luther King Museum, quoting the I Had a Dream speech.
Just purposefully going and sitting at the front of the bus. You know what I mean? Afterwards,
getting on a bus. I don't even need to take a bus, but just getting on one.
Just getting on a bus and sitting at the front.
Oh man. you have to laugh.
Okay.
Anyway,
yep. Absolutely. That was
yep.
So that was Lore Dump. I hope that you enjoyed them as much as we did. I actually quite like doing. I might stick to this and do lore dumps in the middle because it was quite fun having things that were vaguely related to stuff that we'd talked about as well. Mm-hmm. So I feel like
like all the cut some, clan some content fun. That from this episode.
Yeah, yeah,
a lot of cut clan content.
Because Ellen, we cut out a lot of the time where me and Ellen were just talking about the KKK. It was just, you know, we just cut all that stuff out for obvious reasons. But
speaking of which, that was a little bit of history. Did you know that the reason for the name Grand Wizard as like the leader of the Ku Klux Klan, do you know that that actually comes from the nickname of the first ever leader of the Ku Klux Klan, who was, his name was Nathan Bedford Forrest, and he was a Confederate cavalry commander during the American Civil War. And his nickname was the Wizard of the Saddle. And that was where they got the name from.
Wizard of the Saddle?
Yeah, because he was so gifted that it was like he was a wizard.
What I love about that is that, like, and this would really probably piss this dude off, is it sounds like a great, like name for a gay dude. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the Wizard
I'm
the of the Saddle.
Wizard
you know
of the Saddle.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that makes me real happy. You know what I mean? Like, I can 100% imagine being in like a club and like some dude being like, hey, I'm the Wizard of the Saddle.
I'll bed
I mean.
You in my forest.
Yeah. Do you know, like that's quite, that makes me quite happy actually.
Yeah.
So anyway, speaking of things that make me happy, let's talk about Oxventure and your experience of this, because you already mentioned and we've had Andy on speaking about how it was kind of started out as a one shot.
And Johnny actually. We had Johnny on last year as well.
Yes. I think of course. We had Johnny on. We are slowly collecting the Oxventure crew.
Yes, like
as I was saying to Ellen earlier, like little figurines.
What type are you?
What type of Pokemon are you?
Maybe electric.
I swear, I promise you, I was about to say electric because I was like, having met you, I was like 100% going to go with electric.
Hey. Sure. For me, it's going by my loud laugh. Because when I'm not laughing so hard that you can't hear me, like I have a really like loud laugh that is really difficult for anyone doing sound. So apologies to anyone who's ever had to mic
That's
me up.
So fun.
Because I talk, you know, fairly, you know, quietly, low, blah, blah, blah. And then my laugh is very explosive, like real, you know. Mm-hmm. So, And it's like a sharp shock. So,
Well, you don't have the same issue that I apparently have, according to my wife, which is where I have like a kind of movable dial, which is where I always have to be just slightly the loudest person in the room. I don't do this consciously. I'm not aware of this. But basically, she was like, you will adjust your natural talking volume to be just slightly the loudest person in the room.
Great.
And I don't know that I'm doing it, and it really, really annoys me. So we had two Americans stay at our house recently.
Oh, wow.
And my wife was like, after they left, I was like, oh, babe, like, you know, do you like prefer it now? It's a little bit quieter. And she was like, yeah, because you are so much quieter when it's just the two of us. And I'm like, oh, whoops. So yeah, I have similar afflictions. So how did the process of realizing that you kind of, I guess, like, when was maybe the moment that you realized that you kind of had something with Oxventure and like realized that Oxventure was becoming a thing? Because I always think that's quite a fun moment in content creation of like, oh, people are kind of enjoying this. Okay, I'm just going to carry on doing it. I'm going to get, you know what I mean? So like, what do you think that moment was for you? And how was that? Like, were you excited by that prospect? A bit daunted? What was the feelings at the time?
Well, it was like we'd done a few episodes and then we were like, Johnny basically came up to us and said, hey, a friend of mine helps run this festival called The Vaults, which is over in Waterloo. Mm-hmm.
Vaults, I've done The Vaults.
They're not going to, I don't know if it's happening anymore because didn't they lose their venue?
Yeah, sadly. I think like there was a bunch of stuff and I really feel for them because it was such a lovely festival that they did.
It was a mainstay of the London sort of like indie theater scene.
Yeah, it was amazing because you had all sorts of things. So like my sister went and saw like, she's never seen Jurassic Park, but she went and saw a Jurassic Park puppet show with her friend.
What? Yo, your sister's so missing out, though.
I was like, Emily, what are you doing? But yeah.
Jurassic Park is actually a very good film. Your sister's missing out.
It's an outstanding film. I think she was just scared of the dinosaur. She's not good with jump scares. So I'm like, fair. I'm the same. Sure. Johnny was like, hey, my friend has got a slot for us if we wanted. And we did. And like, we sold out. And it was just like a cute little, like one of the little, basically, so for the people who don't know The Vaults, it's in the kind of the bridge underneath the trains. It's underneath the railway, basically. Mm. And so you're in these arches underneath the trains and they've turned all of them into these lovely little theatre venues. And we were there and just hearing people's reactions in a live show is one of the best things ever. So also in that show I came up with the don't be a Dob line that we use a lot. Luke's character Dob is quite impulsive, like that's one of his traits, and
that doesn't sound like a Luke Westwood character. No.
he casts a spell not realizing that the area of effect affected me, who was on top of the monster.
No.
When someone else went to do something, there was this like they were thinking it over and like of what to do next, and I just said, "Don't be a Dob," and Luke went, "Oh no, let's not make that a thing." And Johnny was like, "We're making it a thing. We've had it on t-shirts and stuff."
Sorry, there's nothing we can do about it now. It's done.
Yeah. Also, my best Oxventure joke, like I peaked way too early, was a thunder wave, but we'd done thunder wave like it was an electric thing because Luke cast it using his lute, so it's like an electric guitar type thing. So we've always done it with electricity damage, apologies for rule sticklers listening. I didn't get damaged by it. Like I managed to avoid it because of my armor class and stuff. And I went, well, I can't, you know, I can't conduct electricity. I'm a wood elf. And I was like, so proud of myself. And the reaction in the room was, I was so happy. Mm-hmm. Because the audience likes my bad jokes more than the people on the table with me.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. So this, you have hit on something so key, right? Which is that like, I've told this, but I said this before, I was convinced, fully convinced I was not a funny person in drama school. Because I spent 2 years when we didn't do stuff in front of audiences, because we didn't start doing stuff in front of audiences until like the end of second year.
Yeah.
And in our classes, we do like clowning, and there, I can tell you, there is nothing more demoralizing than being in a drama school class.
Yeah.
When you're like in your early 20s, trying to like figure out your place in the world, and you have to do clowning in front of 20 of your peers, no one else, and they are sat there stony faced at everything that you do. Truly, nothing I could have done would have made that class laugh.
Just bombing.
They were just like, "Nope, he's just not a funny guy."
Because
there's
a competitive element as well. That's the worst part. It's like a hostile audience in some ways.
It's grim. It's grim.
Yeah.
But then we got in front of the audience and I was the one getting the encore. Like we set up a thing with clowning where you get like encore claps where you basically you go up, you start clowning, and then the audience keeps you on by like clapping for you.
Yeah.
Like you try to leave in quotation marks. And if the audience lets you leave without clapping you more, then and like I did like a full like 10-minute clowning set. And then initially I can see the rest of my class sat there like, where did this come from? And I'm like, this is the same material, you assholes. you're just now being swayed by these other people. And I remember I was so convinced I was like the least funny person in the entire universe. And then About a year ago, I was having a conversation with Brennan Lee Mulligan, and he called me a comedian, and my soul left my
body. Oh my goodness. I was like,
okay, I'm done.
Yes.
I'm done. Yes.
That's the ultimate compliment.
I'm done.
I remember I was hanging out with Emily, and she said this, like, she was like, when she was doing Outlaws Novelist, she was like, oh yeah, I just thought of you all as comedians. And I was like, Oh man!
I can't tell you how good that feels.
Yeah,
you're on College Humor.
Oh man!
That's very, very affirming.
I would die on the spot. Yeah. No. Well, for me, fortunately, like the main reason is because everyone knows on the table that if they're going. Like that.
Yeah.
That is also funny. Mm. And that is to they, funny. You know, they're doing it to get a reaction. Yeah, yeah. So like the people watching get two jokes. They get the stupid joke that I make and then the funny reaction from
the
others.
The reaction to it.
And I've never been like actively discouraged from making my bad jokes. Although like Johnny has killed Johnny's killed NPCs.
Oh no.
Because I wouldn't stop, but it was very funny as well.
Oh no. You know, Jasper, I feel like Jasper nearly got pushed to that because Jasper would come up with all these cool names for his characters in his home games. And I initially it was because I misheard them and would just mispronounce them. But then I started intentionally mispronouncing all of his character names and then just calling them other names that sounded vaguely like what he had made. And it was genuinely painful.
I need to tell you right now, you saying that brought back a flood of memories, which
Jasper's whole demeanor just changed.
I can't express. I really was like, "What are you talking about?" Like my brain just suddenly got like a wave of memories as I was like, "Oh yeah,
the pain."
Jasper, you had a love. I think it's fair to say you had a very love hate relationship with my character, Dennis Goldsberg.
Yeah. 1 minute I'm making spreadsheets because of his business enterprises, and then the next minute I have him just ripping into any NPC that I made. Just like there on the spot.
Yeah.
And then helpfully on that same game, one of the other characters, played by the lovely Jonathan Charles, just refused to trust any NPC I made. Like to the point where like I just made NPCs bad because I was like, well, okay, fine. I'll give you a secret because you're not going to stop doing insight checks on them until I give you a secret. Also, like, till you get some dirt on this guy. So I'm just going to make them evil now, I guess.
Yeah, it's the unlocked door problem where, exactly. like, you see a door and you check it a million times and literally all you had to do is open it.
I feel for
Johnny murdering the NPC in our situation because there were a lot of gnome characters and there are so many puns to be had the gnome because it rhymes with so many things, so,
right,
like you know, I asked them if they were gnome alone, do they shop in British gnome stores, which is an old reference.
Wow.
British gnome stores.
Yeah,
wow,
it's a deep cut for a British audience only, who are not Gen Z.
The majority of the audience is just sitting here like, what?
What does that mean?
Also, this was, I don't know if you might have had this, Ellen. Actually, you, I guess you as well, Jeremy, having frequented both, you know, the US and the UK quite a few times. I feel like having been to the US a few times now, it's made me realize how fucking twee England is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, like all of our names for everything is like so delightfully quaint. And it's like, it's like kind of embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like even you saying British home stores, like of course have like a whole chain of stores called British home stores. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know what I mean? Americans have Target.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? A Walmart. Like, you know, it's just like big, strong sounding name. We have
and a lot of our cities
homes.
Are like, are like, a lot of our cities are like neighborhoods are like Native American names or they're like
really
Spanish
cool.
names.
Yeah.
Like,
there's
a whole bunch of different, there's French names and all sorts of like cultures that feed in. Whereas England, it's almost exclusively English. And then maybe you go to like, if you go to Wales, you get Welsh names. You go to Ireland, you get Irish. Like Northern Ireland, you get Irish names and stuff, but it's like Wellesley or things like that.
It's like I was actually driving around with two Americans in the back of my car, and they were like, "Oh, look, that street's called Puddle Street," and I was like, "Oh, for God's sake!" Like, I was just like, "Oh, like," I was like, "Of course, it's a Puddle Street." You know what I mean? Like, just how stupid,
Hollydale Road. Street.
Yeah.
Yes. It's just, oh man. Yeah. It just, it very much made me, it's made me laugh over my time of going to the US and like not realizing how twee we were. Mm-hmm. And then getting there and be like, oh God, we're insufferable. No wonder they think that we all just sit around sipping tea and like we're from Downton Abbey, because that's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's exactly what all of our roads, all of our towns are called. Like, that's what it is. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Painful.
I wanted to quickly, oh, what was I going to say on that note? You know what it, what really drives it home for me is the difference in children's programming. And I think I've said this on the show before. American children's programming is so much louder and like more high energy than English children's programming, at least when I was a kid. Because I saw Teletubbies before it came to the States, because I watched it in London. And so I would watch British kids' TV and everything would be like, hello there. So nice to be here.
Look, hello, children.
The sun is just cresting over the moors. Oh, why don't we say hello? Give it a wave. Hello, sun. Like, that's the cadence.
I'm having
of
a Ratatouille moment.
That's all of it. Like, it's not just Teletubbies. It is so much
hello,
of it.
Boys and girls.
It really is.
Yeah. Whereas,
it
like,
it really is. Here, here, kids, these are your new best friends, Rosie and Jim.
Yeah,
exactly.
Rosie.
Oh boy!
This
is so freaking cute.
Rosie's got a little scratch on her knee. Oh, Jim, go get her a plaster. Jim,
oh no!
Go ask mummy for a plaster, no. Jim.
My favorite one is like, it's like, oh no! Look, it looks like Nunu has sucked up. He shouldn't. Time to tell him off. Naughty Nunu.
Oh!
I've got a surprise lore dump. Actually, I've just thought.
Oh, please, double times one.
So
double jump, go for it.
So Teletubbies in the US has different voiceover for some of it, so it actually has an American accent.
Oh wow!
And whoa. I know the person who in the
what's
American.
What's up? It's me, Tinky Winky.
The opening theme song
it's
is
your
a
boy
rat
now.
I know.
Sorry,
just like back the fuck up. Like, that's just
Nunu, get back in your lane, son.
I know the person who goes time for tubby bye byes in the American.
Do they say the same thing? Time for tubby bye byes.
Yeah, it's like it's all the same, but they just do it.
Go
in
to bed.
Accent.
Straight. Let's just
go to bed. Get a, go away. But like, yeah, like the children's programming that was on at the time, I was seeing stuff like there was Dexter's Lab was within a few years of that. Powerpuff Girls was within a few years of that. Courage the Cowardly Dog, like big, loud, high energy.
I want to clarify. Courage the Cowardly Dog and Cow and Chicken should never have been made. Like, they are harrowing, harrowing TV shows. Like Cow and Chicken particularly is aggressively inappropriate.
Then she had a cow. Dad was proud. He didn't care how. What the hell are those lyrics, folks? Like,
yo, did y'all see the episode with the bikers, with the biker gang?
Yeah,
and it's a bunch. It's an all women biker gang, and then they run into the room and start chewing on the carpet. Like,
I just realized.
Or there was also an episode of Animaniacs in which they were like, they were searching for clues, and Dot was like, what should I be looking for? And I think it was Wacko's like, you need to find Prince. And she's like, okay. She runs off and runs back on holding the artist Prince.
Yes.
And she's like, I found him. And he's like, no. Fingerprints. And she just looks at him and he looks at her like and she's like no, and then throws him away. This is American kids TV.
Wow. Okay, so like I just want to say there's a kids show that I've been watching recently a lot is Bluey. which is Australian. Yes. Oh,
Bluey is the best.
Bluey is the best. And Bluey is S-tier. One of those shows that's actually, you know, for their parents. Like,
yeah, it's actually a good
show. But it's
show.
For mums and dads and parents everywhere of every type. And
the amount of Bluey like clips I send to my pregnant wife is obscene. Like, because I'm like, this is our life soon. Like, because Bluey is the perfect encapsulation of parenthood. And I'm like, this is going to be it. We need to look forward to this.
Yeah. Whenever I'm like, I've been flying away a little bit, and it's just like, airport. I'm not going to the airport. And it's that little clip. It's just me going. I just go up to my sister and I'm all going, airport? I'm not going to the airport.
I'm not going to the airport.
I am bingo. I am bingo. And yeah. I love incredible. Bingo so much.
Mm. Absolutely incredible. Oh, wow. I genuinely have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. The Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, D&D. Referencing cow, like, whenever a cow and chicken gets referenced in my, like, field of view, I immediately just, like, my brain goes in some sort of weird, like, thing where I just can't think about anything else.
Yeah.
It's just...
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see Ren and Stimpy?
That was the same one.
Yeah, right?
Ren and Stimpy's even more hardcore than Cow and Chicken.
Yeah.
It's the voice
of Cow, I think, is what really like makes me want to throw up. Like, I really honestly think the cow's voice is like.
Did Cat Dog make it over to the UK?
Cat Dog. Cat Dog.
It's just called
Cat Dog.
Oh yeah, like the sausage looking thing. Yeah. That made it over.
I think most of the stuff we got, but yeah.
Now, one major difference is children's comics. I think I've mentioned before that I used to be an avid reader of both the Beano and the Dandy. My grandmother would mail them to me every week. I was a big fan. Dennis the Menace, Bash Street Kids, rather. Not Backstreet.
Yeah.
Bash Street Kids, Desperate Dan, Minx,
Kids,
Owen Goal, etc. I don't know. Did y'all ever read the older comics in those? Because, like, the ending of every Dennis the Menace strip up until, like, the 90s was him getting beaten by his father at the end.
Wow.
His dad, it was like a running joke that his dad had, like, a selection of slippers that he would use to spank Dennis at the end for the bad things that he was doing.
Wow.
And they eventually phased... They phased that out.
Back then, that in England, that's just like a good solid upbringing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the reason why that happened. Because they were like, it's just good for your moral education to get slippered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
in such contrast.
We're not barbaric. We're not using belts anymore. You know what I mean?
It's rubber-soled slippers.
It's fine. Yeah,
exactly.
It's
definitely
wool.
Still hurts.
What is this? It's laughing.
Oh, thank goodness. But, like, it's literally, Dennis, the British Dennis the Menace, the American Dennis the Menace had nothing to do with each other, but they debuted the same week. And the American Dennis, this is true, completely unrelated, but they debuted the exact same week. And the American Dennis the Menace was just like a mischievous kid who would sometimes get in, like, he would accidentally cause problems without really meaning to. The British Dennis the Menace is a psychopath. He is a cruel child. And the ending of every strip was him being beaten. That was the status quo. And I know that they had to change Walter as well, because he was basically homophobic. I don't know if they realized that at the time. But Walter the Softy, I don't know what they call him these days. That was his name. His name was Walter the Softy. And he had a whole team of people called the Softies, who were portrayed as being very, like, effeminate. This was in, like, the 90s and 2000s. This was throughout the 2000s.
Yeah.
And Dennis would just bully Walter. And Walter was the bad guy. Because he was smart and liked to study and kind of looked down on Dennis. So Dennis would be really mean to Walter. And that was that was the story. Wild stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who was responsible for Arthur? I think that was American.
Yeah, Arthur's great.
Arthur's
pretty cute.
Great.
The most angry that got is when he has a weirdly clenched fist in the opening titles.
No, he punched his sister. That's from. When he made that fist, he punched his sister.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, there's an episode where he punches his sister. And he gets in big trouble. She did something that she broke something of his, and he's like, I told you not to touch it, and punched her in the arm, and she falls down and just runs away crying. And it's like, oh no. And then at the end of the episode, Binky Barnes, who had been like portrayed as a bully but was actually like a nice kid, I think basically gets pushed by the other bullies into punching Arthur. And Arthur gets a taste of his own medicine. So he just like feels like he has to. And he punches Arthur so hard that he cuts him. Like Arthur has a Band-Aid, I'm pretty sure, at the end of the episode.
What?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Arthur had a Band-Aid on his arm because Binky punched him.
To be fair,
Binky
is built like a...
he's a hippo.
Like
Binky's a literal hippopotamus, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's built like a UFC fighter, for sure. Oh, Arthur's dear. Well, I think... Yeah, in true 3BH fashion, this
what was this interview?
So wildly off of
the rails. We played Deadlands together.
We played Deadlands together. That was what I was building towards. We got to play Deadlands together. And what a great experience it was. Anyway, that's all we've got time for. We did get a chance to play Deadlands together. I believe that it will be out by the time that this episode comes out, the two episodes that I've done. I must admit, it was an absolute blast getting to play with you. It was getting a blast getting to play with Luke as well. You trying to rally Luke playing a child is one of the most enjoyable experiences I've had at a TTRPG table. Just you desperately, because Luke was constantly giving you the looks of like, I know this is naughty. Like he was he was fully in kid mode.
Yeah.
Like, and you could see him looking at you like, I'm going to push the limits now, just so you know. Like in the way that kids do. And it's very, very, very enjoyable to watch. I did actually want to ask you how you found playing Deadlands, and if there's anything about like the system and just the game in general that you've particularly enjoyed.
I feel like it's a real game of chance, even more so than D&D. I think it's a little bit harder to get to do what you want to do done. But also I think that's just, you know, Andy also wanting to make the world a little bit harsher than our like fun whimsy times in Oxventure. Like this is, you know, the Weird West. Everything's scary, and there's like, you know, we meet a bunch of like strange characters that we've got to take down. I really like the kind of there's one in it where it's like Andy during the thing went, oh, there's actually a skill for this, and it's boating. We were like, oh, is it gonna be like a, you know, athletics role or something? And Andy was like, actually, do you have a skill in boating? And I was like, no.
No, clearly I don't. But I didn't look down and think, oh, I'm gonna need boating.
You know,
that's really important. I'm gonna make sure I take that.
But you've always got a chance to do something. It's you know, it's a disadvantage, but you know, you're never no option is completely cut off.
I must say I really do enjoy the exploding dice systems.
Exploding dice is great.
Very satisfying.
So if for those who haven't played or haven't seen it, basically if you roll the highest number on a die, then you can roll it again, you can explode it, and like you can basically keep doing that as long as it lands on the highest one. And like sometimes, you know, we've been able to rack up a few really, really, really high rolls. And it's great. And so basically to succeed on anything, you have to roll a 4. And then for every 4 above that, that's with a raise. And like if you get a raise, sometimes in shooting, you get like the opportunity to roll an extra dice on your damage and things like that. And like there's little bonuses here and there that are either in the game or the GM can, you know, give to you and be like, oh, I thought that was really cool, so I'm gonna let you roll an extra thing for this or whatever. It's really exciting. But you know, when you like, if you mess up a roll as well, you've got the opportunity to use, you have 3 bennies, what they say, basically 3 tokens, and if you get a bad roll, you can spend one to have another go on the roll. And poor Edie, my character, has not had much luck with as soon as I'm like, I'll spend a Benny and roll it again, it's always like worse.
just my luck.
Yeah, I do seem to remember during the episode that we did that you did have particularly bad luck.
When it came to
you
Benny's.
You burnt through Benny's pretty quickly.
But,
and I remember feeling quite bad because I think I got like that, like, oh, he's the guest thing where like Andy was like very generous with giving me Benny's as rewards, and so like I was sat with like a stack of like 7 Benny's whilst I was also rolling really well, and then, like, I looked over and Ellen's just like rolling like trash and then has like 1 Benny left, and is like, oh, I probably should save this in case I die or something.
But it's fun. Like Andy has had like a really, you know, fun set of adventures for us, and he's always wanted to make sure that, you know, we get there and get through it, but it's whether we get through in one piece or alive is the, the issue. But like, you
that's
know
the, yeah what's been the gnarliest what's been the gnarliest violent like maiming or that anyone has suffered? I've never played the game, but I'm imagine that there is some sort of violent event.
Listen, Jeremy, I don't know what you're talking about, but I know my character is not responsible for any violent maimings whatsoever, okay? So I need you to just back up a second and stop throwing those accusations directly at me for some
reason. That's true. Dan did cut the part where I said, and why did Jasper's character cause the event?
Exactly. That's true. Yeah. No, there genuinely is a very, very, very violent moment with my character. Because Andy really did kind of like set me up. And you know when you kind of get like the DM nod of just like,
go for it.
Like, I was kind of starting to describe something, and then he was like, let's go.
Yeah. This sounds cool. Like, this sounds cool.
Okay.
It's like the climax of Whiplash. You know what I mean? When he's like,
Yeah. That was exactly it. And if I didn't stop, he would throw the DM screen at my head.
Yes, exactly.
But no, there is. I don't know where that ranks in the tier, Ellen. But I because obviously I haven't seen or been a part of the other episodes. Mm. But that involved like eating someone. So you know.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So that was pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty violent.
Well, there was an episode that I was not in, but was really excellent, is one where there's basically duels, and there's some very exciting and terrifying descriptions in there. Andy really went all out on some of well, this is what happens when you shoot this person, or this is what happens when they shoot towards you. Here we go. At one point, I contracted tuberculosis.
Ooh, that's not good.
Which is a thing in the game.
That's pretty bad.
So you can get basically a chronic disease of some kind, one that will eventually make you worse and worse at things. And basically, I would have been okay, but as we write, basically at the end of each game, we did a thing and Edie was okay. Mm-hmm. I won't say what it is, but like basically small spoilers, it's okay, I didn't get tuberculosis. Basically if you contract something like that in the game, it's something to do with like at the end of the game you then like roll a dice to see if you live or die.
Oh my goodness.
Are you gonna get worse or are you just is this it, you know? And like you have you have minuses,
like an immune system
rolls. Basically,
yikes.
And it's wild. Like, there's so many. Like, we've like in our series, we have scratched the surface of Deadlands. So like, if you have enjoyed watching Deadlands on Ogg's Venture, or you know, you're intrigued by it, like, do give it a look, because it's so fun, and there's so much, but it's not hideously complicated or anything like that. It's, you know, it's just there's all these things that you can play with if you want to. It's been really interesting though as a system. Like, I've always played like magic characters, and there are magic wielding characters. We have someone on in the group who uses magic, and we fight against some creatures that use magic and things like that. But my character Edie is like guns, kick things, knife. There we go. She's a bit scrappy. And like, so it's been really like, so what do you want to do? I was like, well, I shoot it. I'm going to shoot it again. Okay, I'm going to shoot it. Okay, I'm going to put a knife in it. Okay. It's just like, it's been really interesting, like having that slightly different approach to things. If like, you just got it. And like, and if you're like, you got I want to shoot it. And then you roll real bad and you're like, I miss. I don't shoot it. I didn't shoot it. I shot something else, you know. And there's like, if you get, there's things like if you get snake eyes, like that's real bad.
Bad. You are bitten by a venomous snake that just appears.
It just turns up.
How many times do I have to keep doing this?
I don't want to be doing this. No, I really enjoyed playing it, and there was something really fun for me about playing a like quote unquote just like civilian kind of character who like hadn't seen any of the weird stuff. So like Edie Ellen's character kept on being like, oh yeah, like when so and so came back to life, my character's like, what? Sorry, did I miss like a whole what? Like it was really, really enjoyable getting to like getting to just like I think there's something quite fun about like getting to dip into a kind of ongoing kind of campaign. It really is quite a liberating thing of like, oh, my character can be you know, doesn't have to kind of like, I can mine maybe some different waters that I wouldn't maybe want to do for like a full campaign.
Yeah.
But I get to like just, you know, just play around with, but I'm still going to interact with characters that are as fully fleshed out and realized as they are. And that was actually really, really enjoyable.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So basically I was at Scouts, and which is basically like this, it's like you do all of the like, yeah, how to build a fire or learn to iron, and you get like little patches basically.
I was a brownie.
Yeah. So, basically the same thing.
Girl Scouts.
Yeah, absolutely. And we went on like a trip, like a residential, whatever, where we go camping, and it was on the side of this big hill. And one day they bought out all of these, like bin liners, which they kind of like attached to each other. And then they chucked a load of like baby oil and stuff down it. And then we would like, it was a really hot day, and we basically slide down the side of this hill, and you would go at like an absolute, like, pace. And
I've
then basically
this,
what happened
yeah.
is all the big kids went first, so they all went down to the bottom, and then as soon as the little kids sort of we all like jumped on, they chucked a bunch of thistles at the base of the thing, so we just slid straight into, and I'm not talking like two or three, I'm talking they brought out like black sacks full of thistles and just poured them at the end whilst we were like halfway down the slide. Oh. It was excruciatingly painful. So
That's mean. It was really bad. We were like,
some of us went to bed and would like lie down and be like, ah, and we'd like have to like help each other pull like forms out of our like,
that is horrible.
And little things out of our back. It was bad. We were in pain, but yeah, that was, and like our scout, the scout leaders were like, eh, it's kind of like, it's just what happens. Like you get bullied. And I'm like,
what?
I don't think I like
Fire
this.
Fire those leaders! Oh my god!
This feels really honestly bad and really uncomfortable and really hurt.
That's abusive.
Yeah.
It was bad.
My brown eye wouldn't have stood for that.
This was like, you know, late 90s, early noughties. So, you know, I guess just anything goes.
Like, you're lucky that was Britain and not the US. Like, yeah, there's sure, a really litigious sure. society like America has been for a long time.
Wouldn't have stood.
Folks are getting wouldn't sued. Wouldn't have stood. Folks are getting sued.
Yeah, no one got sued. We just got told to, you know, stiff up a lip and stop crying.
God,
that's bad.
I love England. It's great. Yeah. It's great here. Like, it's great here. Yeah. It's great here.
I just remember one of my mates just crying and saying he wanted to go home, and they refused to even let him call his mum. Which was pretty, my goodness. Yeah. It was, you know what? It's funny actually, seeing that recounting the story has made me realize where like some of my deep seated adult trauma comes from. Mistrust.
Oh no!
Like mistrust of people that are
Jasper,
larger than me.
Why are your cheeks suddenly so wet? Why are your cheeks sweating? Are you crying?
I'm sweating.
Visibly weeping as you tell the story.
I am actually sweating, to be fair, because it's really hot in the UK right now. It's excruciatingly hot.
That's really rough, though, dude. That was a funny story until then.
Ellen, I ruined your tale from the table. You know, but it was just like, I was like, oh no, this is exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
And like, I've had this.
No, I get it. Your initial thought was like, whoa. And then as you were telling, you're like, oh,
I was like,
this
oh, this
wrong.
Is actually really bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's only when you tell it to other people that you realize how bad it was. You know what I mean?
Because our faces go, what?
What? Because in my head, I was like, oh yeah, this was like so funny. They like put thistles at the end and it really hurt and I cried. Wait.
That's such a British response though. It's like, trauma, lol.
Trauma, wait. Oh, good. Character building. Look how tall my character is now. I've had it built so often. This is great. I'm so great. I love it. Anyway, not going back to the
Jasper
scouts anytime
a quick virtual
soon.
Hug.
If you could, that would be lovely. But I'm also going to throw a virtual hug to our amazing guest for today, Ellen Rose. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been one of my favorite interviews we've done in a while. This was absolutely bananas, and I loved every single moment of it. It was hilarious.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much for putting up with our bullshit. Like, I really genuinely, and I really genuinely mean that. Like, I really mean that. Like, truly, I mean that.
It's good. I absolutely love, like as you said, like, kind of when like, jumping into a different Let's Play that, you know, that you're just, like, joining and being like, hi, bye. Like, it's that energy that I'm getting here. I'm just like, hi, let's have a weird one. Bye.
So English. Let's have a weird one, shall we?
Let's have a weird one. Right?
Let's have a weird one.
Especially if it's a bit of a weird one, yeah. Or
yeah,
a bit of a weird one.
Yeah.
Cheeky weird one. You know what I mean? Cheeky little weird one. Oh, that's amazing. Ellen Rose, please tell everyone where they can find and follow you on the internet, and they can check out all the cool stuff. And if there's anything that you want to plug or talk about specifically, please do.
Well, you can find me, my username across most things is Ickle Nelly Rose, I-C-K-L-E. N-E-L-L-I-E.
See? We're
Rose.
So twee. It's lovely. Like, Ickle.
I'm small.
Love it.
It came from a nickname that my dad, I was like, Ickle Nelly. So, I was like, yeah, let's make that my entire brand. Okay. I'm an adult.
My childhood toy was a little polar bear that I called Ickle.
Like Icicle?
Yeah.
That is a good name for a polar bear.
That's the last time I'm going to interrupt you, Ellen. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
Please.
so I'm that across like most things. I'm on like Instagram, TikTok. I'm on Threads. Not really using Twitter anymore. and things for certain reasons. But yeah, I got my own YouTube channel. And then my day job is I work over at the lovely Outside Extra with my pals there. And we do, if you want to see all of our tabletop stuff, it's over on Oxventure. And coming up shortly, we will be at the end of October. Sorry, getting ahead of myself. End of October, we are going to be at MCM London. Doing some D&D live, which will be really fun. So you can come watch us play D&D and all dressed up. I will be dressed up as Meryl Wen, the wood elf. It'll be really fun. And then we're going to be doing MCM Birmingham, which is the first weekend of December, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. So we will be there. Do come and say hello. I think we're on the Friday for Birmingham. So yeah,
amazing, thank you so much. Jeremy, where can people find you on the Tinterwebs?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Jeremy Cobb
One. Oh yeah, I'm on Blue Sky.
I posted like four things on Blue Sky and then I've just immediately forgot that app existed, but
I keep forgetting that I have it until I have to plug it. I'm also on Instagram as the Cobbmeister. I'm on I have the Quantum Reactors, a movie review podcast that I do with my friend Andrew Coons. Go check that out wherever pods are cast. I'm also going to be DMing at D3 at Sea in the fall of this year, 2023. Go to d3atsea.com and sign up to play with me, Jeremy Cobb. Fall 2023 is going to be great.
That's his name.
Say again.
I just said that's your name. That's you said you play with me, Jeremy Cobb. I was like, that's me.
That is in fact me. Come play with me, Jasper William Cartwright and D3C. and finally, also, I am on the show Project Marana on Roll For It. We stream Thursdays at, I believe, 12 p.m. PST. Check that out. Also, all the VODs are available. It's a Call of Cthulhu game, and it's wonderful and fun and awesome. That's me. How about you, Jaspy?
Thanks so much.
You can follow me at JW_Cartwright on all of my social medias. You can follow the show at 3. That's the number 3 Black Halflings. And what other things will I plug? I'm on Games and Feelings semi-regularly. And this is mightily exciting, because I think this is the first podcast that I've recorded in which it's coming out after a thing that I've done, so I can actually say that thing has happened, which is so exciting. So if you want to, you can go over to Dimension 20 and you can check me out on the most recent season where I play Thorn Vale. I'm extremely stoked about that and the fact that I can actually finally talk about it. I told you I had big stuff to
cover. What's the name of the season, Jasper? What's the name of the season?
The name of the season is called Burrow's End. We all play a family of stones. So please go.
Oh, they got
out.
You in for the Twee English stuff. Yes. Yeah,
Twee English stuff. There was a reason that Abria requested that I join that. And Brilliant. She told me explicitly that I wasn't allowed to do another accent other than my own. Because she wanted me to
we
do.
We want the proper British.
So it's basically like a Farthing Wood type deal where, like, it's weirdly violent.
But so messed up. But but incredibly messed up.
Do you remember how violent Farthing Wood got?
Like I think I might have blocked it out.
The scene where the hedgehogs are crossing the road is genuinely alarming, because there's like,
they used to do a thing.
All the animals, the plot of the first book is them trying to travel to Farthing Wood because I think their current forest is getting chopped down. And as part of that, they have to cross a busy street, and most of the animals get across okay. But I think it's Mrs. Hedgehog freezes up in the middle of the road and can't bring herself to keep going. So Mr. Hedgehog goes back out to try and talk her through it. And then both of them get frozen up and they're both desperately trying to resist the urge to instinctively curl up. And there is an oncoming car and the rest of the animals are screaming at them like, please come on. And they're both like, don't curl up. Don't curl up. And then they curl up and get run over. And it is like, it is genuinely very dark and very alarming and disturbing. Like it's a rough scene. And
to be honest, Burrow's End, it goes there.
Yeah, like a Watership Down sort of thing.
I would say there are equally as horrific things, honestly, in that. So yeah, please go check that out. Oh, and also go and check out Rotating Heroes. I'm the new DM for Rotating Heroes, which is a podcast with Zach Oyama, who was on the show. Weirdly, was on the show promoting Rotating Heroes podcast, so it's a very pinch myself moment to sort of think that I'm now the DM for that show. Zach is a player, and it's an absolute blast to be working on that with him, so please go and check that out as well. But those are two of the big things that I told you was coming. I told you there was big things, and I kept on saying it, and I kept on saying it for like months and months, and it's weird because I'm gonna have to go back to not saying it for like the time, because this is like 3 weeks before I'm allowed to say any of those things, but this is coming out after those things, so it's fine. Anyway, time is weird. please go and check out the Three Black Halflings Patreon, which is patreon.com/TBHalflings. It's how we fund the show and keep doing more awesome stuff, having great guests on and doing crazy cool actual play. And obviously we have merch as well, which you can find all the links for in the description below. But I think that is everything for this week. Thank you so much again to our amazing guest, Ellen Rose. Please go and check out Oxventure. Go and check out Deadlands, which I was on, and and give them and show them some love, because they're awesome people. And that is everything for this week. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Whoa, committed. I love it. So, yes, it's so
time
so
for Huffling bye bye.
Time for Huffling. I know, Jeremy, don't make that epic, because I'll commit to that.
Time for Huffling bye bye.
No, because you know for a fact, okay, we're out now, but you know for a fact there would be Americans that would listen to a full Halflings ASMR channel.
Jinky winky.
Just us doing, like really sweet,
jinky winky.
Like a jinky winky?
That was a HeadGum Podcast.